Hello, and welcome back to Ag Tech Talk. This is part two of our discussion with Russ Putland, Executive Vice President, Commercial and General Manager USA for Lavie Bio, and Nir Arbel, Chief Product Officer at Evagene, Lavie Bio's parent company. In the first part of our discussion, we talked about how Lavie Bio used MicroBoost AI, Evagene's tech engine, to develop a pair of biological products. In this part two, we're going to discuss how those products are going to be brought to market, but the challenges were to overcome both regulatory and the adoption challenge. Thanks for listening. Welcome back, Russ and Nir. The Lavie Bio, the biology-driven design platform. Can you just talk a little bit about what that is and how that fits into the MicroBoost AI?
Right. So it combines MicroBoost AI as well. So part of it is obviously MicroBoost AI. But then another part, as Russ mentioned, is the Taxonia database as well, which is also a wet database, meaning they have, I don't know the number, maybe Russ you do, but I think it's tens of thousands of microbes within the refrigerators that are also computationalized, meaning that when they screen for gene that they desire and bacteria that they're looking for, they can actually virtually screen whatever's in the refrigerator and then pick those out once they decide that this is, you know, the correct bacteria to test at that, you know, that point. And then on top of that, there's the entire internal process, which also includes the, you know, the experimental methodology, how to make it through from product requirements all the way down to the final product. Everything's from the discovery process, the development, the optimization, the fermentation and the formulations of the products, and all the way through. So it really encompasses everything that MicroBoost AI provides, everything that's in Taxonia, and the entire very complementary methodology that allows Lavie to kind of feed in and out through either Taxonia or MicroBoost AI for its reaching their end goals.
If I may, I'll add to what Nir said. I'm a simple guy, and the easiest way that I can liken in a non-science way to kind of help out with maybe a little clarity, think about when you go to grandma's house and there's a big pail of Lego. And it's all mixed up for over the years. There's some from the 70s. There's on a spaceship that's from the 80s when Star Wars was big. And they're all in a pail and all messed up, right? They're all in one big bucket. And that's kind of the bucket that is Taxon, right? There's all these different strains, right? And what the platform allows us to do is to take a look and pull each of those strains out and lay it out separately, almost like puzzle pieces. You know, you set the edge pieces out first. And then you know you can start to build, and the cleaner you can see them, right, then you can do something with them. And it doesn't mean that you're always right, but the closer you're to right, you know, the less what we call optimization you have to do in the process. And you can build things like, if you decide you want to build a car or a tractor or a spaceship, you know you need a certain pieces to do that when you can see them clean. But in that bucket all by itself, if you don't pull them out to have a look, it becomes really difficult to build, right? A lot easier once you've sorted them, you understand them, you know what their function is, and then you can build, you know, what you're trying to build, right? It just cleans it up. And that ability to see those little Lego pieces cleanly is exactly what the platform and the AI behind it does. And it just puts you on a way more, greater velocity, greater accuracy. And it's not one, right? It's faster, but it's also more accurate, and you're more likely to have success, right? Your probability of success gets better through each piece of that as it gets cleaner.
I like that analogy, and I think people all over the world will understand that one. And I was going to make a joke about stepping on it, you know, in the middle of the night. Feeling
that happens too. You know? That does happen.
So let's talk a little bit about, again, what prompted this whole conversation is, you know, I got the press release about the two products that were developed using these tools that you've talked about. Right now they just have, at least as of that press release, they just have those, you know, sort of generic, you know, not product names. Can you talk a little about When the process started for those two specific products, and then also curious what they are, you know, and what they're, what the whole, the goal is with the, to how to use those.
Right. Yep. So it takes roughly 5 years, if everything goes well, to, from kind of a product concept and getting the product defined to taking it to commercial. Now there's a couple wild cards in there, being regulatory, right, in country, depending where you're at. Some countries, it's not that difficult to register products, and some it's very difficult. Or you'll run into, even in the United States, where, you know, Oregon is very different than California, right? Where it's very done on a state level, in a lot of cases. There's also a couple classifications that make large differences. Bioinoculants are a lot less rigid in terms of what they require than bioinsecticides or biocontrol products. I'll give you an example. Our bioinoculant is registered, and it's a pair of microbes, and it would be a lot easier to register that than it will be a biocontrol, where you're actually, you know, inhibiting life of some sort, right, in terms of a pest or a disease. Both these products were developed pretty much from their very early days of the Lavie. So we're going back three, four years in both of them. Lav 311 is a downy mildew product and a powdery mildew product and a botrytis product. That one may be soft launched in 25, more likely 26, depending on regulatory. We've submitted a dossier for Oregon and Washington, and California will follow shortly after. There's some more information needed for California. And we anticipate that we submitted in December of last year, and we anticipate that by December of this year, well, we should have regulatory approval to be able to commercialize that product. But I do strongly advocate for crawl, walk, run. There's been a lot of biological products. They've been around since I started my career almost. And the rules around them vary greatly. And it's so important that we as a company do the work on the back end and have the data and have the proof points, the proof of concept. Because still, you know, 50% of the challenge to get somebody to use one is skepticism. You know, it hasn't changed in that regard. And part of that is the transgressions of previous people. And some of that's just human nature, something new, something different, right? And that's not a bad thing necessarily, right? So we get it right on the front end. So that's 311. 321 is back about a year and a half, 2 years from that. The other piece of 321 is it's a downy mildew product. Not really targeted for large use in the United States, but more likely Europe, where the disease is a lot bigger problem, which also creates some challenge. Regulatory in Europe is a lot more challenging, I think is the right word. You can submit on a regulatory basis as all of Europe, but if you did that, we'd probably never get to market. So we go country by country, and it varies greatly. You know, company our size, that's challenging, you know. So in the Europes of the world, you may see us entertain partners to be able to bring that solution. It's a market that's very friendly to our biologicals, but at the same time, not so friendly in terms of being able to commercialize. And I think some of that will sort out over time, you know, with the regulatory as the industry evolves, no different than it did with synthetics and other products. But that's kind of the two products. Both are showing efficacy, at least with the current biological standards, and in a lot of cases closer to synthetic standards, which is really impressive.
Yeah, you mentioned skepticism. I know these tools may help you get a product to market quicker and develop it quicker, but the regulatory process doesn't help. Yeah. The regulatory process, I'm guessing.
Yeah, not a whole bunch. You're not in control to some degree. What I will say is that you know, the regulatory that we've embarked on in the United States and now Canada, they're very helpful in trying to advance. There's, you know, I would say tailwinds with government supporting, you know, the biological movement. Sometimes they don't always understand, you know, we're evolving at the same time they are. But they've been very fair in how we go about it with APHIS and CFIA in Canada. I think that they're doing a pretty good job for an industry that's really in its infancy yet.
I have a few more questions on my list here, and I think we've kind of talked around them a little bit. So, you know, I'm trying to maybe narrow in just a touch. So you've developed these products, you know, it's taken 3 to 5 years to, you know, get them to this point, these two in particular. Well, let's start with this. How many other products are being looked at? I mean, is that, I don't know if that's a fair question. You know, are you, you know, is this AI system working constantly to sort of explore different molecules and bacteria and different things that are, that it's always looking at? Or is it, again, you mentioned also that maybe you had to look for a particular solution, or you had to have something in mind that you wanted to start with. How does that kind of all play out?
So maybe I'll answer on the technical aspect of it, and Russ can refer to the LiveBio's pipeline. So the system itself is a robust system. However, not, you know, everything can be run at the same time. So there are, you know, limitations and constraints on what apps can or can't be run. And but what really drives the computational solution is the soundness. So you do need to have in mind, you know, what are the requirements you're looking for? What are the questions you want to ask? I understand that we only touch this, you know, very superficially, you know, having a gene catalog, but there's so many other layers kind of upon that that relate as well to the, you know, the various possible questions that, you know, the scientists can ask, you know, in terms of, you know, what are the genes, what do they look like, what is their 3D structure, what are similar 3D structures, are they involved in any known pathways, and so on and so on. But all these questions at the end of the day, they relate to the requirements of the questions that the scientists want answers, and that what the system provides. So it doesn't need to be prompted towards a pipeline. And I'll leave it to Russ maybe to discuss more about Lavi's pipeline.
Yeah, I think it's an important distinction that Nir brought up, that it's really driven by the need of called the farmer, the grower, or the industry for that matter, or the consumer, right? I've been in ag now 30 years, and I don't know that I've seen the consumer have as big an effect as they have on an industry as they are today. You know, we have farmers that are making decisions based on end use. You know, and we talk about products in the pipeline, and to me, it's even deeper than that. We sell our product to distribution, who sells it to a grower. But in that chain, we have somebody that's buying the grain, somebody that's processing the grain, someone that's milling the grain, and then ultimately a food company. And on our first product, which is a bioinoculant, we've actually integrated all the way along the path, and there is a contract in place for a farmer that he can sign up for, where he will get paid a premium to use an advanced sustainability program. It's in its infancy. You know, we're starting. We've got you know, one mill on board today, and likely another one shortly. But it reinforces the value of the biological kind of chain. And I see that in a bunch of different products, whether it be the people that are managing vineyards, you know, and how they're thinking about it. It's always about who are we selling it to and what do they want. In our product line, we have a bioinoculant today that's in the marketplace in the US, Montana, North Dakota, and Minnesota. So that's in place. It will be in our second year of commercial sales this year, and with a grain contract to support it, and maybe two. The next product that will hit the marketplace will be 311. That'll be 25, probably soft launch, 26, somewhere in there, depending on regulatory. It gets a little foggier when we get out to 321, just because Europe's involved, and it probably involves a dance partner for someone like Lavi, you know, with some support of those functions of regulatory and in-country, and, you know, as a small company, that's challenging alone. We also run some programs with Corteva. I won't get into the specifics of them, but, you know, around more corn and beans focused products. And we also have a partner in ICL that we've got a couple separate projects on as well. And last but not least, we are also working on nitrogen fixation, which is pretty exciting. It, you know, from a carbon perspective, is probably the home run and the holy grail of biologicals. You know, that's the one that everybody's striving for. But we've also got these other strengths, you know, in other areas that we don't We don't just abandon just because end fixation is where everybody is chasing. You know, we want to do what we do well and where we see opportunity. And given what we know, those are the areas that I guess we spend time in.
Make sure you give me a call when you're ready with that product.
Yeah, no kidding, right? A lot of big claims out there on that one, right? In the industry.
Sure. So you said the you have the one product. Is that the Thrivus?
Yes. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, it's a seed treatment bioinoculant. Goes on at 10 grams like a normal synthetic seed treatment, coexists with synthetic treatment and gaining momentum. It's been good.
Yeah, I was looking at your website, and you know, you have this the product pipeline, and you know, and that's the one obviously that's listed in the commercialization column. But you know, you have others that are in pre-development, pre-commercialization, mildew. You know, so it's interesting. I think that you say, you know, here's where we are with these different products. If you were developing 311, 321 without these tools that we've been talking about, you know, would it have taken 3 to 5 years? Would it have taken 7 to 10 years? Would you, you know, still be, you know, where would you be if you didn't think you had these tools? Doing it more, I guess, I don't know what the traditional way is, but, you know, differently.
Probably the easiest way is to compare it to kind of a synthetic scenario, right? To give it a bit of context. When I left the last company I was with in the synthetic world, we were 10 to 13 years, depending on product, from discovery to launch. And that's provided everything went well. That also gets accompanied with about $150 million price tag to bring something to market. You know, we talk here, if all goes well, 5 years. You know, probably the greater advantage is in the active that's available. Call it active ingredient in synthetics or microbe, you know, where we are. As we run out of options synthetically, we have to have success, you know, and that has really given life to some of the biological industry as well. It's not just, you know, sustainable. It's not just healthier. It's we don't have options in spots. And in some cases, administrations are helping that process out, right? Outlawing existing actives and, you know, and there needs to be a sensibility around that velocity as we move to biologicals, you know. Do I believe one day we could be completely biological? Yeah, I do. Do I believe that that's going to be 2030? Probably not. You know, I think there needs to be tempered. There are synthetics that we need in the world today yet, you know, or people are going to starve if we start, just running away from them, you know. But I think there's a sensibility of advancing these products that are in the pipeline. You know, if it's a 5-year window, you know, in 15 years, that's 3 generations, right? And if we follow kind of what synthetics did over 3 generations, you know, and the growth can be that great and probably greater given the AI, the big data and all NIRS world, I think you can expect that we get there and that products become a lot, you know, even more rapid in development.
And I think for Lavie as a platform company, to relate to that, you know, how does, you know, the 5 years compare? So it's very hard to compare apples to apples here, right? Because you wouldn't, you know, start up a Livy with a computational platform and one without and see, you know, who does better. But I think if you know, you look at, you know, the Brightus process, right? They started out with around 600 bacteria computational that they only tested for, are they positive or negative for Botrytis, just to build that initial aspect. And selected 150, you know, out of their database, tested out that they have all the other functionalities. So actually only truly tested 30 in the greenhouse, out of which 5 were selected for field trials and 2 ended up being the product, right? So having that sort of statistics, yes, can happen to a company without a computational platform. But if you have a very a diverse pipeline, there's no way that you would be as lucky to get, you know, these sort of statistics again and again and again.
Yeah, I think it's fair to say that the world of biologicals today wouldn't exist without it.
Yeah,
there's just too much there. The other piece is a lot of positive things are coming out of collaborations. I would say if you look at biologicals versus the synthetic world, The ability to have success and having a willingness to collaborate is very different than what synthetic stuff, you know, I don't know if it was arrogance or if it was just the nature of the chemistry previously, but, you know, it's almost our responsibility to collaborate with others to drive this forward. If you really believe in, you know, the health of our soil, the sustainability, you know, and healthier food, we can't ignore others that have success in areas. And probably the best thing could happen is 4 or 5 companies had success, you know, that have something that makes commercial impact and kind of rewrites the rule book a little bit, you know.
I think we really covered all my issues, my questions. You know, is there something that we haven't addressed that people should know about?
You know, from our standpoint, it's an adoption market largely. So we have areas where there are biologicals used more of the fruit and veg market or the higher end. There's a little bit of a higher penetration. It seems like if a consumer pops a grape in his mouth, that's a little more direct than a loaf of bread, right? On a wheat crop. And what I would say is it does take time to adopt and to get growers to use things and to advance those things. And you can't work around that. You need to do the work and to lay in the trench with the farmers to be able to kind of walk them through that experience. You know, in our bioinoculant, we're talking about a 6% advantage. If you're not looking close, you're not going to see it, right? You know, you can measure it with yield at the end, but there are so many other pieces to walking a person through it that investment at the grower level. And then, you know, even with there are certain procurement companies that get it, right? You've seen companies that put stakes in the ground that said by 2030, you know, we're going to be 25% further down sustainability path, like Canada, or, you know, some that say we want fully sustainable production by 2030. Now, whether they get there or not doesn't matter. What matters is that they're on the road to get there, right? And for me, it's a bit of a journey. It's not perfect. It's a living organism. We can never forget that. And from year to year, that changes. But the consistency of when I started my career with early biologicals to now is night and day. We are definitely on a wave of technology change and product change with it. So, you know, I would encourage people to take a look at them and try to make them work.
I think I've used this line many, many times. I wish I could remember who told it to me and, you know, give them credit. I can't, but he said something to the effect that every farmer he's ever met must be from Missouri. Russ, you're laughing because, you know, Missouri is known as the show me state.
Yep.
You know, it's you know, farmers are traditionally like, all right, I hear what you're saying, but you know what? You got to prove it to me. You got to prove not only is it a good product, but, you know, it's going to make me money. You know, it's not going to cost me money. And, you know, so they want proof behind this. And I think that's another thing, you know, the science behind some of these products that are now coming out is much more substantial and, you know, it's replicable and, you know, it's independent and, you know, it's not like it used to be, you know, 10, 15 years ago, where it was like, yeah, we got this product, just go ahead and try it. You know, it's great. And, you know, it doesn't work because it's, you know, you didn't have the science behind it.
It's funny you mentioned the Missouri thing. 2 weeks into the role with Levy, I was standing at a farmer's field and we're looking at a side-by-side trial. And he got to know me a little bit and he called me Rusty. You know, I knew right away that he's leaning in a little bit. And he said to me, you know, I care about this sustainability thing. And he said, so does every other damn farmer on the planet, right after our financial sustainability. and you know, it hit me like a 2x4. It shouldn't have, but it really did that, you know, you have to base, if you want success with the biologicals, you just can't lean on sustainability only. You have to have the other benefits to the farmer and to the value chain. And if that, in the absence of that, they don't stand alone. No regulation can't force them. That's not the way it's going to work.
For sure, for sure. If somebody wants to learn more about, you know, Levy, you know, Levy Bio, where do they go? What do they do?
Sure. Check us out at levybio.com or evigen.com would be, you know, our parent company. Also, you know, other websites, corteva.com and ICL as well. They're partners of ours, so we'll give them a shameless plug. You know, we can't do this journey alone. I stress that, and that's why we have the selective partners we do. You know, and I'd leave the group with that, you know, we're open to talking with other biological companies too, because we don't do everything perfect, and neither do they. And sometimes the collaboration you know, that's where we could really have magic.
Join us next time for another installment of Ag Tech Talk, where we'll talk with another expert improving the ag industry through technology.